Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 9 of Power Up and Game Podcast. My name is Michael Mosley. I'll be your host today. And joining me as co-host is Riley. Hello, Riley.
Hey, Taylor. Taylor. I've just been talking to you for half an hour. I can't even remember your name. Hey, Michael. I have to pretend like we haven't just been talking, you know, before we're recording the podcast for like half an hour.
Which we did throw Taylor's name around a bit for like different ideas, so it would make sense. You know, we were talking about asking him to do more stuff with the podcast. So Taylor, if we start messaging you with new ideas, we're so sorry. We're gonna put extra work on you. All right, let's see what's on the docket for today. Despite the rumors, it looks like Gotham Knights will remain a two-player co-op title. However, it won't be dropping on last-gen system, which, if you still don't understand what last-gen is, well, right about now, the PlayStation 5 and the Series S and X are current-gen. I know a lot of us still don't have them. I know a lot of us are still waiting because of chip shortages. But unfortunately, yes, your PS4 Pro and Xbox One X are now considered last-gen. Also on the docket, Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope, and Skull and Bones are scheduled to be released by March 31st of 2023. Nintendo's president talked about the global semiconductor chip shortage that I mentioned earlier. EA has talked about their upcoming games, including a major IP and a remake. And in our main topic, we'll talk about a recent-ish video showing off a horror project on Unreal Engine 5. Is Unreal Engine 5 a look at the future of video games? We'll talk about that in our main topic. But for right now, let's get to our stories of the week. WB Montreal shows off new gameplay demo for Gotham Knights. And this showcase was about 13 minutes long and it focused on Nightwing and Red Hood. The demo featured a glimpse at co-op combat, more traversal elements, and even a few things when it comes to the menus, such as upgrading your heroes. And despite rumors that Gotham Knights would extend its co-op to 4 players, it appears WB Montreal is sticking with a 2-player co-op for now. WB Montreal has also canceled development for the Xbox One and PS4 family consoles. Reception to this demo has been a mixed bag, and that's putting it very lightly. A lot of people thought that while the game has promise, the combat and traversal mechanics look pretty clunky. The Arkham franchise was consistently praised for its smooth combat, so seeing Gotham Knights, a game from the devs behind Arkham Origins, face criticism over its gameplay is a little surprising. The visuals weren't all that great either, especially for a game that's not coming to last-gen consoles. This led to some suggestion the game should be delayed yet again to fix those criticisms and avoid a potential disappointing launch. For those wondering if we're heading towards another possible Marvel's Avengers situation, here's some quick info from WB Montreal's Frequently Asked Questions page from Gotham Knights that may or may not impact your thoughts on those comparisons. And they follow, the game can be played in solo or two-player co-op. It doesn't support local co-op. You'll need an internet connection and on console, either PlayStation Plus or Xbox Live. However, if you wish to play solo, you do not need an internet connection. The game can be played offline that way. And with more on co-op, WB Montreal says the game does not have cross-play support and it's not planned at this time. Gotham Knights won't have any microtransactions, and it is set to be released on October 25th, 2022 for the Xbox Series X and S, PlayStation 5, and PC via Steam and the Epic Game Store. Riley, what are your thoughts on this demo? And also, do you think the game should be delayed yet again?
I thought the demo looked fine. I don't think there was anything in my view that was looked particularly off about it. In this story, you know, you mentioned the visuals and also the gameplay looks a little clunky. To me, they looked fine. So I don't really know exactly where those criticisms are coming from. You know, it doesn't look like it's going to be a 10 out of 10 game, but not every game needs to be that. I'm actually interested. So, like, I think I've said on this podcast before that I wasn't interested in playing this game or even checking it out, but honestly, after doing some research about what the game is, I definitely am interested in playing it more. It looks like it's going to be kind of taking, it's going to be in the same vein to me, it seems like, as Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a game that I really liked. And even though, you know, the combat in that is, and the combat mechanics in that are different, I think, even so, it still seems like kind of in that vein. So I don't know, like, I'm excited for this game. Like, I'm definitely going to play it, I think, when it comes out. What about you? What are your thoughts?
It definitely looks like a last-gen game. And, you know, I think that's where most of the criticism comes from. It's like, since they're no longer doing the Xbox One family and the PlayStation 4, PlayStation 4 Pro versions anymore, I think people expect it to have some of those features that you want to see from the next-gen game. Because they're charging $70 for it. So they're definitely charging the next-gen price tag for it. And it just doesn't look like the kind of game that you would expect, you know, especially after we had stuff like Ratchet and Clank and even Halo. Like, I don't know. Halo has its open world and has its own art style. But you go back and you look at the Arkham Knight trilogy. Well, the trilogy, because Origins didn't come out on consoles, did it? Did it do a re-release?
I do not know.
But yeah, you look at the Arkham trilogy and what they were doing on the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, and it looks really good. It didn't run all that great, especially on PC. I remember that had a huge issue. But it still looked fantastic for an Xbox One game and a PlayStation 4 game. And then you played on Xbox One X and PlayStation 4 Pro. You know, it looked the same, but it performed much better. So I guess a lot of people expect that level of detail in a co-op game. And when you're told that, okay, we're not longer doing that, we're now doing it for current gen, for the Series XS and the PlayStation 5, people now expect far more than just last gen looking graphics. I actually tweeted about this myself. The game doesn't have ray tracing. It doesn't support VRR that we know of, and it doesn't have 120 frames option that we know of just yet. So really, you look at it and you think, what am I spending $70 for? Like, nothing about this says next gen, especially on a PlayStation 5, because maybe they'll do something with the adaptive triggers, but really, without next gen like features, it's kind of hard for people to say, yeah, I'm going to drop $70 on this, especially since the PlayStation 5 itself is having such a hard time meeting demands that a lot of people still don't have PlayStation 5, so they're going to miss out on this game. And while the Series S itself is easier to find now, a lot of people are going to want to play this thing on the PlayStation 5 or the Series X. So I think the biggest criticism from everybody is, since it's no longer come out on last gen systems, the graphics should look way better than this. And I think that they're actually kind of justified, especially since WB wants to charge $70 for this.
Yeah, maybe it's just because I didn't really have many expectations for this game to begin with, and what I saw from this demo actually made it look more interesting to me. Maybe that's why I don't know if I really agree with the criticism. I do agree with the take that it doesn't really look like a next gen game, but to me, you know, graphics aren't everything in a game. And, you know, this, as far as the $70 price tag, I think I sounded earlier a little bit like, yeah, I kind of want to play this game, but I was kind of unsure about it. That's why, right? Because of the price tag. It's not that I don't want to play the game, but it's just like, you know, now that games are $70, which is not, I mean, I think we should acknowledge that $70 is not that much more than $60. However, it does something to the brain for me, which is like, okay, you know, I really have to pick and choose what big games I'm going to buy for the this current gen of consoles because, you know, it's $70, right? So that's why I'm a little bit hesitant whether I'm going to play it or not. But I don't think the game looks like really bad or anything. As far as, like, do I think the game should be delayed? If the criticisms are about the visuals, I don't know if it should be delayed, because I don't know how much you can polish that, right? At a certain situation, that's just kind of how the game looks. And to bring about those next-gen visuals, to add ray tracing, to do all this stuff, might require, you know, really deep technical work, and, you know, might, in other words, it might make the game worse if you try to add all that stuff in when it wasn't scoped for that at the beginning of the project. It might actually make the game worse if they try to bite off more than they can chew technically. So I don't know. It kind of depends on the situation, I guess. Do I expect the game to sell really, really well and to be in the upper echelons of the games that we're talking about at the end of the year? No, I don't. But I do think that it will be a footnote, an interesting footnote of the year, and DC fans are going to play it, and I would like to play it, I'll put it that way. I don't know if I have the time nor the money to spend on this game, but, you know, it definitely, and I hate to say this, it seems like a game that if it goes on sale, will be a pickup, absolutely, but I don't know if it's going to be a day one pick. But again, that's just because of my taste in games, and also just because of the limited amount of time and resources that I have for games at this point.
Yeah, I sort of agree with you that the graphics aren't everything. You know, you can't just look at a game like, oh, the graphics aren't that good, I don't want to buy this. Because some games, they put more emphasis on fun than actual graphics. You know, it's the whole don't judge a game by its looks kind of deal, you know? But for me, it is that $70 price tag. Like, if you're going to try to give me a premium price, I demand premium features. So, I broke down and I got Ratchet & Clank for $70 because, you know, first of all, I know Insomniac Games is going to deliver a good game to me. So I feel like it is worth the price. I don't think games should be $70. I still think the $60 price is the sweet spot. I think $70 is asking a bit much. But again, we talked about this months ago.
Yeah.
The biggest difference is that people are used to the $70, $80 being like a collector's or special edition. And then $100+ being like the mega ultra, you get a whole bunch of stuff from killing a statue kind of deal. And you know, we're seeing less features for more money. And I think that's the biggest problem. I hate to say it, but there are very few like big games out there that I feel are worth $60 alone, let alone $70. So I think for a lot of people, just like you, I'm getting more and more picky with what big games I play. And I think a lot of people are doing that. Like, people are being very frugal with what $70 game they're going to get.
I was just going to say, it's a hard mindset to get into. Especially, like, I think you brought up a great point of, you know, we're used to games that are that price tag giving you a bunch of extra stuff. Or at least some extra stuff. Like a season pass, maybe, or something like that. And now it's becoming the price of the base game. And there's games that I really want to play that I haven't because it's $70. Returnal is a great example of one of those games. You know, I think that game would be perfect for me, but I go into the store, I look at it, and it's like $70. And every time I spend that money on a game, or I think about spending that money on any game, I think to myself, am I going to have the time, or am I going to have the time to want to play this, like dedicate the free time that I have to play this to justify that price tag? And sometimes the answer is yes, and sometimes it's no. And sometimes that's not the game's fault. Sometimes it's just a matter of my own taste and just in general becoming more picky about the big experiences I play, like you said. You have to cut things somewhere.
Yeah, and I think for a game like Gotham Knights, it is going to be kind of a hard sell because people are going to wait for a sale on it. WB, they have like, what was it, Halloween sales and whatnot. And unfortunately, I think this is a game that you wait on a sale for. And that's very unfortunate because it did look okay. It was like a fun beat 'em up, you know, because everybody, they wanted a new Arkham Knight. You know, they wanted a new Arkham game. And this is about as close as we're going to get, I guess. It's kind of like having online multiplayer in Arkham, in the Arkham Knight series. But yeah, I don't think it's worth $70 just yet. I haven't seen anything that says this is a game that you're going to want to drop $70 on. I hate to say it, like if it was 60, I'd be a little more lenient and be like, yeah, you know, it looks like an average game. It's like something that we usually get. But for me, I want to see what they do with it first. Because of course I will get it for my Series X or PS5. And I don't know, it doesn't look like a game that I want to get immediately. Even if it was on Game Pass, I'd be like, do I really want to spend the disk space and my limited data that I get from my internet downloading this game? And that's very unfortunate.
Yeah, so I feel a little bit differently. For me, if this game came out on Game Pass, I would absolutely play it. Because I'm interested in it, right? But it just goes back to that thing of like having to cut certain things. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people like you and me and, you know, a lot of other people out there that aren't the like hardcore DC fans, they're just going to look at this probably and go, okay, I'm going to cut that. You know, I'm going to say like, I don't have to play that game this year.
I think another thing that ruins it for me is that I'm waiting on a different game that got pushed till next year. I'm waiting for Suicide Squad Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. I'm sorry, but I was looking forward to that game way more than Gotham Knights. And seeing that got pushed back to next year, and this is still coming up this year, I have no excitement for it because Suicide Squad took that excitement. And that is a game that we know is built from the ground up for the Series X and PS5. So when that comes out, I kind of feel like, yeah, that because it's built for those systems, it kind of justified a $70 because we know WB is pushing for a $70 price tag. So I guess that's what really kills it, is that this feels like it should have been on last gen and crossed over to next gen. And now they're just going to pretend it's current gen, and there's no crossplay, none of the other features I was talking about. It's really weird that there's also no local co-op on there. Like, it just looks like a game where you and a buddy, you could like just play Gotham Knights and just kind of like jump around the city and dick around as one of the Bat family.
Yeah, I'm more forgiving of the no local co-op thing. I mean, of course I'm disappointed about it, but that seems to be pretty par for the course, especially for AAA games these days.
Which is sad.
It is sad. It definitely is unfortunate. But the thing, it doesn't really quite make sense to me why those other versions of the game, like why the last gen versions of the game were canceled.
Because, I think they were having technical issues.
Yeah, because this thing has to be
pushed back.
It has to be that because no doubt the install base for the PS4, you know, the PS4 alone, the install base is larger than... And like definitely the PS5, and I think also the Xbox Series. Wait, yeah, the Xbox Series X and X combined, I think, at this point. So like definitely a larger install base on last gen. So I think you're right. They just ran into technical issues and said, I guess it's not really worth it.
Yeah, and also, and then this is not, and this part is just, you know, putting on my tinfoil hat with this one. I also think because since they were having technical issues, WB, instead of delaying the game again, decided to just nix the whole thing. So now they completely justify their $70 price tag to make up for missing out on those huge install base that is the PS4 and Xbox family consoles. And on top of that, since they're doing the $70, I don't think they're even planning on doing a cross-gen upgrade kind of deal, because you know a lot of people, they would just bought the $60 version of the PS4 and Xbox One and then digitally upgrade them to the PS5 and Series X and S.
Yeah,
but that's tinfoil hat, you know. It's more than likely because of technical issues, but, you know, big publishers, they don't like to miss out on money, so.
That is true. They do not, they don't like to miss out on that sweet, sweet cash.
Speaking of missing out, several Ubisoft games to be released by March 2023. Also, is Ubisoft up for sale? In an earnings report, Ubisoft noted that Avatar, Frontiers of Pandora, Mario plus Rabbids, Sparks of Hope, and Skull and Bones are scheduled to be released by March 31st of 2023. While it's interesting to hear that these games are actually coming out soonish, there's another news story that we haven't really dived into, and that I think we can talk about here since we're talking about Ubisoft games itself. Is Ubisoft up for sale? There are a lot of potential signals that the publisher is selling. On earnings calls, Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot basically said that while they believe the company has everything they need to stay independent, they are always open to offers. So Riley, what are your thoughts on these long-awaited Ubisoft games coming out by April of 2023, and do you think Ubisoft is trying to sell?
You know, as far as the games coming out by March 31st, 2023, that's not surprising. I think Avatar is, or at least it was shown to be coming out at the end of 2022. I think it might be the same thing for Mario and Rabbids as well. I'm not sure about Skull and Bones. I don't think anybody, even at Ubisoft, is sure about Skull and Bones. That game has been in development for what feels like an eternity. But in terms of the, you know, is Ubisoft up for sale? As far as what Yves Guillemot said at the earnings call, it didn't seem anything to me like, it just seemed like business jargon, right? Where it's not, well, maybe not business jargon, but just the idea of, because they are a publicly traded company, if any serious offers come in, they have to seriously take a look at it because they are operating their business, not for us, let's remember this, not for people who play games, but for the shareholders. So if an offer comes that will benefit the shareholders, then more likely than not, the board would do that. But I don't think I see that as any potential sign that they want to sell. Everybody's got a price point, right? So I would not be surprised if they did sell at some point in the future.
When it comes to Ubisoft, there's so much we can talk about. First off, Avatar Frontiers of Pandora. I can see that coming out pretty soon. That one actually was like they waited to announce it and that they were actually making progress. Because we knew about Ubisoft working on an Avatar game, what, 3-4 years ago? And all we got was... I said what?
I don't know that I knew that. But oh, okay. the what I remember is it was revealed, I think the first time I knew about it was last year at the Game Awards. They showed it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Ubisoft announced, well, they didn't announce it, but they teased it a few years ago where all they had was like a single concept art. And they were like, oh, yeah, we're building a new engine for it. We're getting a team together and yada, yada, yada. I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And remind you, this is also back when we didn't know what the next Avatar movie was going to be called, nor when it was going to come out. So we were like, oh, we're going to get a new game before we do a movie. And now we're getting the movie before we do the game. So yeah, I'm actually kind of excited for this because it does seem like they took their time because it was always supposed to be for the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series consoles. So, like, again, this is a game that was built from the ground up for current gen systems. So that one, I'm actually okay with them saying like, oh, yeah, it'll be 2023. It's like, okay, that's fair. I didn't actually expect it to come out this year in the first place, because when Ubisoft is ready to show off a game like for the current year, they do it pretty early, especially when you have a property like Avatar and the new movie had just got announced for December of this year. You're going to want to capitalize on that. As for Mario and Rabbids, I don't really care for that game. I didn't play the first one. So this one actually kind of, I forgot they even showed off gameplay for this. This one completely skipped my mind. And as for Skull and Bones, I was talking to you, we were talking about this earlier before we started recording. I saw Skull and Bones back at E3 2019. And that kept getting pushed back so much, I just thought it was going to get nixed altogether. So to see that they're still saying it's going to come out in 2023, to be honest, even though it came from Ubisoft, I'm taking that with a grain of salt, because this game has had like 3 or 4 different release dates. And yeah, again, if Ubisoft was getting ready to show off a game, especially something like Skull and Bones, to prove that they were close to releasing this game, they would have been all about it. They would have been showing it off. But they've been so quiet about this game that the only time we hear about Skull and Bones is either A, is getting delayed, or B, hey, please don't forget Skull and Bones exists. Like, there's no real hype behind it. Like, I don't even think Ubisoft is too hyped about this anymore. In fact, you got it confused with a different pirate game, Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, I did.
I was like, oh, hey, remember Skull and Bones? Like, oh, yeah, that came out years ago. No, it's still waiting. Rare beat them to the punch. Well, a bunch of games did. But yeah, Skull and Bones, I'm not even sure if anybody's still excited for that game. At this point, because of the way Ubisoft has been operating for the past couple of years, not too sure if anybody is still like super hype for this one. But as for Ubisoft selling, I know the Guillemot family, I'm pretty sure I've read that they're willing to buy Ubisoft like completely. Because that family has been the driving force behind that company for a long time now. And I think they're just going to make it part of their family, and like, it's going to be the family business. So I don't think that somebody else is going to pick them up anytime soon. Like, don't expect Microsoft to do it. Heck, don't even expect Embracer Group to get them like that. I don't think even they will get their hands on Ubisoft if Ubisoft does decide to go to a private entity. I don't know who they would even sell to, or with all the stuff they were going through, just like Activision Blizzard, I don't know what their worth would be. So yeah, I do think Ubisoft will go for sale, but I don't think Embracer or Microsoft or even Sony would buy them. It's either going to be one of those big conglomerates we don't really know of, because they have so many companies under their umbrellas. We know the companies more than their parent company. But yeah, if Eve actually buys out the company, I wouldn't be surprised by that either, because if he does, he's in full control for life. So I don't think he wants to give that up.
Yeah, it should be mentioned that in one of these articles that Taylor added to our show notes, that he will also link in the show notes for the listeners, in a VGC article written by Tom Ivan, he mentions a couple of private equity firms that have shown some interest in buying at least a majority stake, I think, in Ubisoft. So it wouldn't be anything like, you know, Microsoft or Sony or anything in gaming. That's at least what it seems. It did also see in the article that it mentioned that the Guillemot family might be partnering up with these private equity firms to get financing to buy Ubisoft. So that might be the deal of what's going on. But yeah, it doesn't seem like a traditional acquisition, like a traditional Microsoft buying out an entire publisher, or, you know, Sony doing the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. So, Riley, who do you think would actually buy them out?
Well, I don't think anybody in the gaming space right yet would buy them out. I think probably the most likely scenario is that, like you said, some conglomerate that we don't know about would pick them up, or you know, the Guillemot family might be partnering with a private equity firm to buy them. I will say, I think there's a sort of an atmosphere in the video game industry now where even companies that are not traditionally in the video game space are taking a look at different publishers and developers because of all of the news surrounding these giant acquisitions, especially the Microsoft Activision one, which we don't have this in the show notes anywhere, from what I understand has gotten some attention from the FTC, some government board, you know, that's supposed to, no, the I would have been, it would be the SEC. It's gotten some attention over there because it is such a big acquisition. But yeah, other than that, it's really just kind of a game, a dice roll, I think.
Well, we also, what we don't know is the issues with the global chip shortage. And fortunately for us, Nintendo's president talks about said shortage in an investor's call reported by the Wall Street Journal. Nintendo president Shintaro Furukawa addressed the semiconductor shortage that has affected all three major console platforms, along with many other tech companies. And here's what he had to say. There is no end in sight to the semiconductor shortage at this point, end quote. As mentioned earlier, this shortage has impacted all three major console platforms and has affected the release of next-gen consoles. With not too much to add here, do you have any thoughts about the quote from Mr. Furukawa? Because, man, he got straight to the point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised at all. For some reason that I'm not smart enough to understand, the semiconductor industry was really, really impacted by COVID-19. There's a lot of supply chain and production issues in that sector, and it affects all other sectors of the economy, not just video games. But no, I'm not surprised at it at all. The sort of like reading between the lines of this is Nintendo saying, don't expect a new console from us anytime soon. Just because, you know, of the chip shortage, for them, you know, it's not a great idea to release something new at this point, because a new console would mean a new chipset, and a new chipset would be an entirely different supply chain issue. You know, I think even with the Switch, they have supply chain issues, but at least those are known quantities that they have been working with. You know, they need a specific chipset, and they know what to expect from the supply chain for that specific chipset. If they were to go and make a whole new console, it would be a whole new chipset. And as far as availability goes, they might end up in the same area as the PS5. Now, with the PS5, I don't think it was Sony's fault. I just think that they had the design and, you know, everything kind of locked into place before COVID hit. And so they couldn't really change it at that point. So yeah, and you know, the PS5 is still having a lot of supply chain issues, as is all, like we talk about on the show, all gaming consoles, you know. And not only gaming consoles, but also graphics cards and gaming PCs and things like that. It's a really, you know, it's gotten to the point where NVIDIA, has to do lotteries for their graphics cards, for their top-notch graphics cards. You know, you put your name in, and I think you probably put in your credit card information with intent to buy, and then they'll send you an email if they randomly choose you and say, buy the graphics card within this window. So, yeah, no surprise for me.
Yeah, and I think this really is the big thing about this, is that he got to the point because, but they're always like that. Nintendo's always like straight to the point. It's like, hey, this game is being pushed back, please wait. It's like, oh, like no real details? Nope. That's all you need to know, is that we're pushing it back. And yeah, I think that is his way of saying that, hey, you're not going to get a Switch 2.0 or anything like that. Like, be happy with the OLED, because that's the newest console you're going to get for now. And yeah, I agree with you with the PlayStation 5 already having those issues. I don't think we should expect a new Nintendo system anytime soon. Sony recently announced that they expect to have chip problems throughout 2023 and even maybe 2024, I believe. So like, we have like another year of having a hard time finding a PlayStation 5, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unfortunate, but you know, it will be resolved at some point, I would say. And might I add, if you can't get a PS5 or an Xbox One Series X or whatever, definitely, like, tackle your backlog. Like, I would see it. Now, I'm speaking from the privileged place of owning a PS5. So just take what I say with a grain of salt. But if I hadn't been able to get one, and there was a long time where I wasn't able to get one, I just saw it as a chance to play stuff that I had, you know, and like play older stuff. And not even necessarily that old, but just stuff, you know, from last generation or whatever. So yeah, I don't know. It is unfortunate, but it's just kind of the situation that we're in, and nobody can really fix it yet. So I don't know.
Yeah, that really sucks. Like, it's been almost 2 years since the Series XS and the PlayStation 5 launch, and now we have another year or two of this scarcity.
Yeah.
EA's 2023 lineup includes a major IP and a remake. EA is making all kinds of moves. The title seems very boring, but the actual story is a little less boring, and the keyword being a little less. An investor call, and we have a lot of those this week, EA hyped up its upcoming slate of games between January of 2023 and April 1st of 2023. And the games described as a remake, a major IP, a sports title, because of course, and a partner title. The sports games wouldn't be Madden, FIFA, or NHL. All of those games are typically released later in the year. As everyone has already pointed out, this could potentially be the college football game EA has panned for a 2023 release. The remake is heavily speculated to be the Dead Space remake that EA has been pushing since the announcement in 2021. But we honestly don't know. Right now, it's kind of a non-story, but it's fun to speculate. So Riley, any theories on what games could fit the bill here?
Yeah, so actually I looked at the IGN article that Taylor posted for us, and they said that in the footnotes of this announcement, it was stated that all of these games have not been officially shown yet, which makes the Dead Space, you know, the Dead Space remake being the remake, a little bit not the case, because they have officially announced that. So I was looking at some games that I would like them, you know, just to see, you know, just to remind myself of what EA owns and what they might be wanting to remake, and I came up with a couple. One of them would be SSX, either 3 or Tricky. One of them, I could see them remaking Army of Dead. I would really like them to remake Need for Speed, Most Wanted. And I think that was about it. Those are the main games that I could see them remaking.
New Need for Speed would be kind of cool, as long as they don't do that. How was that crap they did in the last one? Car cards or something like that? Park cards or something like that? Where you get like engine blocks and exhaust and stuff in a form of digital cards. And it was like, it's super weird and super dumb. Man, what remake? What else would they make? You know, that's really good. EA has so many games in its catalog that it literally could be just about anything. But for a major IP, maybe it's Titanfall, because like there was the rumor that a Titanfall 3 was spotted. It could be fake. I hope it's not. But you know, Respawn said that they care about the Titanfall series, and that it is a major IP for them, and that there is a future for it. So I'm really hoping that the major IP that they're talking about is Titanfall 3, because that'd be awkward timing, but also I really hope good timing at the same time. And as for a sports title, yeah, I really do think it is the NCAA game that EA had already announced that it was going to release. But to have them release it around April time would be kind of strange, I guess. I guess because we're used to football being around like August time. And I don't remember when EA released their past NCAA games. So yeah, remake-wise, maybe a new Medal of Honor. Their major IP, hopefully Titanfall 3. Their sports title, definitely going to be their NCAA franchise that they're going to bring back. And partnership title, I'm really hoping that it's a continuation of their EA original publishing. Because if they're going to keep doing that, I hope they bring in some new developers and not just Hazelight. Now, I do hope they keep working with Hazelight, don't get me wrong. But I also hope they kind of bring somebody else into the forefront. But yeah, those are my predictions.
Yeah, Medal of Honor was the other one that I was thinking of that hasn't been active for a while. That would be maybe a good candidate for a remake. Well,
they did have that VR game from Respawn.
You know that doesn't count. But yeah, I think those are all good predictions for sure.
All right, now it's time for our main topic. Is Unreal Engine 5 the future of gaming? All right, so this discussion was sparked from the recent Unreal Engine 5 demo taking place in a creepy train station from a solo developer named Lorenzo Drago. Oh, that's a Rocky reference in there. I just know it. Unreal Engine 5 has been hyped up as the future of video game visuals and design. We've seen several examples showing off the power of the engine and how realistic it could look. So let's talk about it. Riley, do you think the Unreal Engine 5 is going to become the gold standard for gaming tech?
I think so. I saw the video, just completely unrelated to the podcast. I saw the video the other day. And I showed it to my husband, Quinn, and I said, take a look at this video. And he was like, what is this? And I was like, that was made in a video game engine. I mean, it's crazy. It absolutely looks photorealistic. Do I think it'll look that way in games right now? No. Because we have to remember that I believe what this person made, the demo was sort of a video. And it wasn't really running in real time. So I don't think, as far as I understand it, I don't think you're going to have photorealistic games running in real time just yet. But it does show that the tech is getting there, and it's getting there quickly. And so I do think, it's always hard to say, like, is this going to be the gold standard for the video game industry? Because we also have to remember that lots of developers and publishers have their own engines that they like to work in, rather than, you know, paying for licensing for Unreal. So I don't know how many developers are going to take advantage of this. I can see a situation where a lot of developers and publishers are going to take a look at what Unreal Engine can do and ask themselves, okay, how can we do the same thing in the next version of our custom in-house engine, right? You know, adding stuff like ray tracing and all that other good stuff that adds to the photorealistic look. Interesting question is, once we get to a point where photorealism becomes a thing, is that where the industry is going to go? I think there will be a time when that is the new hotness. Everybody, you know, wants photorealistic games, but I think it will wear off quickly, especially in genres where, like, first person shooters and things where it's a little bit more violent, because I can see a situation where photorealistic graphics would turn a lot of people off from that, just because they don't want to feel like they're killing a real person, which, you know, I can understand. I honestly don't think that photorealistic graphics are going to be the future of games. I think it will be something that is kind of like a fad, kind of like, once we get to that point, sort of like 3D TVs and things like that. Like, it was a fad, but it was a technology that died away. That's kind of,
how dare you,
what I can think about photorealistic graphics. What about you?
I think Unreal Engine 5, especially since Unreal has made it pretty much open to everybody, both big and small, I think Unreal Engine 5 is going to continue to be the top dog in a dog-eat-dog technology world of gaming. It's already pushing the boundaries of what you can do cinematically. So I think a lot of developers are going to use Unreal Engine 5 to do cutscenes at least. Like,
definitely
used to it. Yeah, they're definitely going to use it for cutscenes. They're definitely going to use it to tease their games. Like, hey, look, look at what we're working on. And they're definitely going to use the Unreal Engine 5 to make teaser trailers. So get ready for a lot of bull shots made from Unreal Engine 5.
Yeah.
And if it really is a more streamlined engine compared to Unreal Engine 4, which we've seen a lot of indie devs do great stuff with Unreal 4. If they're really pushing what this thing can do like that, especially with ray tracing and whatnot, you know, we saw what was possible with games like what was it called? Bright Memory Infinite. With a singular developer, and we've seen some of the stuff that devs can do with physics engine. I think Unreal Engine 5 is going to be the engine that we're going to see so many people go to. In fact, EA, who is a stickler for these things, who makes it mandatory that everybody use the DICE engine, I believe even they're using the Unreal Engine 5 in a couple of their upcoming projects.
Sure. Yeah,
I think we might be Dragon Age.
I would also recommend to anybody listening to this podcast, if you haven't seen the Unreal 5 like train station demo, like I'm sure if you just type that into Google or YouTube, you'll find what we're talking about. It's amazing. Like technologically, it is very impressive. Like to my eye, and I don't really have a keen eye for this kind of thing, but it absolutely looks like real life. Which is absolutely insane.
It really is. And I can't help but think the Matrix tech demo that they showed. Yeah. A bunch of people have taken that, and somebody made a Superman simulator out of it. I think somebody else did Spider-Man. People are doing all kinds of stuff with it so far, and like that demo. I'm still gonna call it like a tech demo. It looked so good. I thought I was just watching somebody like getting ready to make a POV TikTok video or something.
Yeah,
just to find out, like, oh no, it's made in Unreal Engine 5. I was like, wow, just imagine what this is gonna do for people who want to do animation, you know, like learn Unreal Engine 5 now, because I really do think this is going to be the thing that so many developers are going to be drawn to, with the exception of people like, you know, like Sony, who has their own in-house engine, or 343, which has their in-house Slipshine or Slipspace engine. I would like to see someone like a Summit Games with Unreal Engine 5. Yeah. I would love to see what they pull with Unreal Engine 5.
Unfortunately, it seems to be the case that most of the major developers and publishers have an in-house engine that they like to use, because I think what it is it gives kind of a uniformity to the games that they release. So if you think about, you know, like PlayStation first-party games, you know, I'm sure a lot of them are in a similar engine, right? Similar kind of technology stack, because they're all pretty close to each other in terms of what they're doing. Bethesda games, same thing. They're all in the same engine. So publishers really like to have a certain kind of marketable consistency among their different titles. And so they like to keep the technology that they're making in these games like somewhat proprietary. So the way I kind of see Unreal Engine 5 and Unreal Engine in general is like, yes, a lot of developers are going to use it for projects. What I see these engines' purpose and what the impact that they will have, like specifically Unreal Engine 5 will have on the industry as a whole, is when a new Unreal Engine comes out, everybody looks at that, unless they botch it, which it doesn't look like they're botching it on version 5. They look at that and they say, wow, that is really impressive. How can we do that? Do we want to do that? If we do that, will people buy our games? Right? So no doubt that the technology is fascinating and really blows my mind. In terms of industry adoption into the full power of Unreal Engine 5 and seeing some of those features become industry standard, I think it's going to take a while. Take a little bit, at least.
Oh yeah, I expect more games using the Unreal Engine 5 to release around like 2024, because you know it just recently hit like its big release. It came out as kind of like a teaser beta kind of thing for everybody, but I think recently it's now in full fledged release. So oh man, imagine the cost that's going to happen with these games running on Unreal Engine 5.
Yeah.
Because with it being so new and everybody getting used to it, there's already a few games that went from Unreal Engine 4 to 5. So it kind of seems like it's very possible to make that quick switch. So it seems like maybe development won't get hit too hard with Unreal Engine 5. Because if they're able to switch so quickly like that, maybe there's plenty of similarities to where you don't have to learn too many new tricks compared to 4. So like maybe people who are already efficient in 4 can move on to 5, like learn a few things, sure, but like maybe they can still apply a large amount of that Unreal Engine 4 knowledge to 5.
Definitely. But that's like, I think moving from version to version, I've never used Unreal Engine to make a game. The most complicated engine I've used is Unity, which is sort of beginner level engine, but I definitely think usually there's a cohesion between versions, and you know, usually if they're designing it well, it will be everything that Unreal Engine 4 was, and then with extra stuff on top.
Yeah, man, I really hope so, because that's the reason so many of these publishers claim that the game is $70, because of the increasing price of these games. And if games are going to look as good as these tech demos have shown us, it's going to take a lot of people and a lot of time. So the more games that move to Unreal Engine 5, I think the better to get started now. But yeah, I really do think, I don't know, it'll be the gold standard. But honestly, because I think Unity is still going to give Unreal Engine 5 a run for its money. So I would say silver, you know. I think it's going to, it's not going to take the top for much, because I think a lot of people are still going to use Unity, because like you said, it's beginner friendly. And on top of that, we've seen some pretty cool stuff working off the Unity engine.
I think in terms of popularity, especially in the indie scene, Unity is pretty popular, because like, you know, like you mentioned, we both mentioned, it is very beginner friendly. But in terms of just raw power, Unity holds no contest to any of the Unreal Engine versions. As far as I understand, Unity is kind of like the next step up. It's kind of like the professional version. Not to say you can't make professional games off of Unity, but just saying you don't see many major, or any that I can think of, major AAA games that were made in Unity. While you do see a good handful that are made in Unreal Engine.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be the big thing for Unreal Engine 5 is how user-friendly is it for somebody like beginners or people without a big budget? Because I think that's what Unreal is really like going for. It's like a mass audience. It's not just the AAA. They also work with the indies. So it would be kind of interesting to see what Unity itself kind of learns from Unreal Engine 5 and where they go to like stay competitive with Unreal, while also keeping their user-friendly moniker.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Unreal Engine 5, it's going to hold its own, of course. But I do think it's going to be the engine to use when you want to show up, when you have the budget and you have the talent and you really want to show off what your team can do. Like I said, if Insomniac had their hands on Unreal Engine 5, like, oh man, if Guerrilla Games, if they didn't have their own engine, if they had their hands on Unreal Engine 5, like, those are studios that you want to see use Unreal 5. After you've seen what one person can do for it cinematically, yeah, you want to see those studios that can do big games right. Like, yeah. I want to see Naughty Dog use the Unreal Engine 5. The Last of Us Part 3 on Unreal 5? Man.
Yeah, that would be pretty nuts.
Yeah, the stuff they were doing on the PS4 was already crazy. But if you can do something like that with the Unreal Engine 5. Even Capcom, you know, no, I would say Capcom, because the way the last two Resident Evils have been looking, the way that Village just looked and Biohazard, oh man, those games running on Unreal 5,
pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think horror games are going to be the main ones to benefit from Unreal Engine 5.
Yeah,
I would love to see it though. I would love to see what indie devs can do with it. I would love to see what these bigger studios we'll do for it. I want to see studios like Insomniac Games and Naughty Dog use it, despite the point that they have their own in-house engines. I want to see them experiment with it and like try. I want to see Ratchet and Clank on it. Okay, I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. I want to see Ratchet and Clank on Unreal Engine 5.
That would be pretty cool.
So before we move on, Riley, what would you like to see in Unreal Engine? Like, what studio would you like to see take full benefit of the fifth Unreal Engine?
I don't have any specifically. I think if any company wanted to use it, they could put out a good, like a good looking, good running game on current gen consoles. Like, definitely the power is there to do that. I'll say that.
So for Rise of Tasso, whoever gets it, just make it pretty. Make me want your game.
Yeah, it's hard for me to really get excited about like what engine a company is using. It's more about, for me, I get more excited about like, okay, what are they going to do with that engine? Are they going to take full power of it? How is the game looking? Those kind of things. So, you know, if a company wants to use Unreal Engine, you know, it's not just a case of like, oh, the engine is great, they're going to make a great game. It's like, no, like you said, they actually need to have like the talent in place to kind of do that.
Yeah. Oh, man. I can't wait to see what everybody does with Unreal Engine 5. All right. So before we wrap everything up, I do want to do a quick little recap on Ludonarikon. Riley, I know I've been spouting about Ludonarikon for like the past couple of weeks, and I'm sure you're tired of hearing about it.
No, I'm excited to hear your thoughts about it.
So Ludonarikon was actually a little more low-key this year than it was last year, which was actually kind of strange for me, because Ludonarikon, it has always been the go-to for me for indie games that focus on narrative. And I think that's what I really like about Ludonarikon, is that it isn't about what's new and innovative. You know, everybody wants to push innovation. How do we change gameplay? How do we do this and that? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, what about a good story? Like, it doesn't really seem like a lot of devs, especially with like the big AAA games, really focus too much on narrative. So Ludonarikon is something I look forward to year after year. Actually, since 2020, I missed 2019. I didn't know it started back then. But yeah, they've been doing this since 2019. They already announced that they'll be back for 2023. I covered last year's Ludonarikon, and I'm excited to cover this year's Ludonarikon. This year, they had a few panels. Unfortunately, nothing that really caught my attention. Again, it was a little more low-key than last year. And I think it's mostly because this year, there are a few select games that I actually looked at. Well, that I've seen them all, but there's a few select games that actually caught my interest like crazy. And I believe I brought it up once on this podcast, Beacon Pines. I know, Riley, I brought that up to you before. Have you got a chance to look at Beacon Pines?
I haven't, but the name sounds familiar.
All right. I think it was like a week or 2 weeks ago I brought it up when I was talking about Ludonarikon. But a little boy named Luca and his friends get into mysterious trouble when they find out that something dark and creepy is going around in a little town called Beacon Pines. And it works as a storybook where you can explore, talk to people, learn more about them. And there are sections where you find words that you can use to replace keywords on different sections of the game. It works kind of like a storybook, to where you can flip like a choose your own adventure book, where you can flip back and forward to any section of the game that you've been through, and you can change the story completely by using a single word to change another word. For example, if you and a friend were trying to sneak past an adult and you don't know how, You talk to them and they're like, sorry, kids, you can't do it because of this reason. If you explore, you could find a word that changes a certain section of the game where the adult you talk to is no longer blocking your path and you can make your way through. I'm doing a poor job explaining it, but the story changing mechanics give Beacon Pines, in my opinion, a unique feel. It's cute and it's creepy. And I really want everybody to check out Beacon Pines. It doesn't have a release date just yet, but it is coming out sometime this year. It's coming out on Steam and it's coming out on Xbox. And I believe it's coming to Game Pass, Riley. I'm not really 100% sure. So you can check that out. And I know you're always looking for a good reason to take advantage of your Game Pass subscription. Absolutely. Just like me. Yeah, but Beacon Pines has come to Xbox and PC via Steam. Another one that caught my mind, I actually sent you the link to this one, Riley. It's called The Wreck.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to look at that yet.
Yeah, you play as a woman named Junon. It's a French game. It's made by a French developer, and it's definitely French. It kind of has like a French art house kind of deal to it, to where nothing is as it seems. As you play as Junon, and right now I'm basing this basically off the demo that I was able to play. Your mother has a medical emergency that could end her life, and you as Junon, you're asked by your mother via the doctor how they should proceed. Whether they do an operation that could save her, but could also affect her mentally, which could lead to memory loss or dementia or all kinds of issues that she won't be the same. So she will rely on family a lot more to take care of her. Or you can choose to ignore the whole thing and your mother could end up dying. But what makes this so hard is that Junon and her mom hasn't always gotten along. And they've had their differences and bumped heads. And for her mother to put her as the emergency contact for her to make this decision is unfair for Junon, as this is just, don't answer her right away. She had no way. She had just found out that her mother was this sick and dying. And that now Junon has to make this ultimate decision where her mother's life is in her hands.
Yeah, that definitely sounds interesting.
Oh, yes. But what makes it so story worthy, the narration comes from Junon running away from her issue and getting into a car accident, which could end her life. And she has one of those near death moments to where she reflects on the past. And it's through these flashbacks, which is a big part of the game mechanic. Through those flashbacks, you learn more about Junon and her relationship with her mother, which leads to either making this big decision or running away from the decision, and even could end Junon's life herself. So like everything you figure out, everything you learn, slowly all these decisions enters the player's hand, and they got to make a decision that will either save the mother, kill the mother, or even kill Junon herself, with all being your decisions of what you've learned about these two characters within this story of this car accident.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it is. Well, from the demo that I played so far, I really like the way they handled this decision making, because it's not just playing the flashback. You actually have a choice in some of these flashbacks. Like, you play through these flashbacks multiple times, and there are key words that you can find. So you're like looking throughout everywhere because you want to find more about this family and what they've been going through, and Junon herself. And the demo, it started off with the one I played, dealt with a bird. And it starts off as Junon bringing the bird to her mother, and her mother instantly taking the bird in and taking care of the bird. And as you play through the flashback multiple times, you start to figure out that maybe the bird was killed. And maybe her mom is the one that killed the bird. And there's this mystery to it as Junon reflects on her childhood and her teenage years and whatnot. And as an adult, it's one of those, I now know what could happen. Like, as a kid, you're innocent, but as you become an adult, you start to figure out these things, and you're like, wow, maybe this woman that I looked up to and that I always thought was a saint, maybe she's not that great of a person, and maybe my animosity towards her is justified. And later on, you might figure out that, no, maybe I'm just jaded, and maybe my mother is more important to me than I thought. And I really like the idea of that. So the wreck really caught my interest. And that one doesn't have a release date either, but it is teased for a spring of 2022 on PC via Steam.
Very cool. Yeah, I'll have to check that out when it comes out. Sounds like a really good, really good story. You know, like, I'm definitely invested in the story.
Yeah, and that's one thing I really love about Ludonarikon. It's like it focuses on games that focus on story. Just a couple more that caught my eye. There was a bunch of them on you, but you know, this isn't the episode for that. We might do a whole show about indie games and some of the stuff that we enjoyed. Minds Beneath Us is a very strange one. It's how can I explain it? It's a sci-fi thriller. It's kind of it has a cyberpunk-esque feel to it, even though it's not completely cyber-esque. I mean, even though it's not completely cyberpunk, it takes place in a futuristic Asian city, and you play as a character that's able to transfer your mind into the it's able to transfer your conscious to the minds of another person, and you play through this character's eyes, and your decisions kind of makes up for that character. Like, they already have preset character traits that you know nothing about and that you learn going throughout this person's journey. What was his name? You're a data ghost, but in the demo that I played, you take over the body of a man named Jason Day, and you wake up in his body, and you're talking to his girlfriend. And some of the choices I made, because I'm somewhat of a nice guy, did not reflect the actual Jason character. His girlfriend will comment like, wow, this isn't like you, or you're usually stoic. And you get these hints of how this character reacts to the world and how he's built. And I was like, okay, that's really cool. I'm learning about this character because I'm not Jason. I'm this data ghost who happened to hop into his body. And as you go through Jason's daily life and you learn more about him, the choices that you make within his body will have an impact on the game as a whole. And what that impact is, the demo didn't really show. And I'm so interested in learning more about this, because you start off as kind of like this sleeper agent, to where you're trying to figure out information. And as you go through, something mysterious happened and you get released because they were going to kill you off and reset your body. But something saves you, quote unquote saves you. And there's just so much mystery in this demo alone that it really caught my eye. And I'm like, yo, I want to know more about this. Like, there's so much I don't know. I want to know more.
Yeah, that one specifically seems like a good way to kind of trick the player into doing like real role playing in a video game. Yeah. Because in most games, it's like, okay, be whoever you want to be. But I don't know if a lot of people have this issue, like the same issue that I do. But usually I just end up making decisions that I would make rather than a character would make if it's like a blank yeah. slate kind of situation. So I think it's an interesting idea to like put your character in another character's body and say, okay, you're this person. And then as you start to role play this person, you realize like, oh, maybe I should be playing him like differently. Like, maybe I should embody him, you know, rather yeah. than the way I'm trying to play it or something. Like, it's to me, that seems like a really interesting idea to at least trick me into like role playing as this person.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that I really loved about it, is that the characters will react to the way you're doing things. And I want to see more of this interaction with characters, because that's a big part of this game, is the interaction with others. like the comments from the girlfriend or even the neighbors. You can get into confrontations with your neighbors, and the way you react, you know, will, I guess, impact that. I'm not sure because the demo didn't show it. It teased so much, and it really caught my interest. And it does exactly what a demo should do. It makes me want to know more about this game. I want to know more about the world. I want to know more about Jason. I want to know more about me being a ghost data. And unfortunately, this game doesn't have a release date at all. It doesn't have a 2022 or a 2023 release. It just says coming soon. Not soon enough for me, but oh my goodness, I would really love to know more about Minds Beneath Us. And I'm hoping that I can get in contact with the devs and learn more about that, because now I'm super interested.
Definitely.
Yeah, there are a few more games that I really look forward to. Mindhack was one of them. Just real quick, Mindhack, you play as these gloved hands. It's actually you. It's your POV. But you play as these as a doctor who is capable of going to the minds of other and getting rid of these things called bugs, which actually gives them these less than favorable character traits. Like in the demo, you had to try and fix someone who runs a gang and who's been accused of burning down a shop and a few other homes. And of course they plead they're innocent, but of course in this society, if you don't act a certain way, they find these bugs in your mind, and you as the doctor have to go in and get rid of those bugs and make them into model citizens.
Lobotomies. Which, you're performing lobotomies.
Technically, yeah. Only with this lobotomy, people actually, they can still walk and talk, and they're not mindless zombies, technically. But yes, that is a great way of putting it. I don't want to talk too much about this because, you know, we have to get this going. But in the demo, you go into the mind of this thug because you think, oh, he's a leader of a gang. They burned down houses. Of course, they threw Molotovs. And as you play, you learn about his past by going to his mind. And I hate to say it, but you invade his mind and you invade his past, where you learn about how he grew up an orphan, how he feels like he's lonely. His parents didn't want him. And he was in this home full of children who were abused by this caretaker. So he grew up hateful.
The mechanic, sorry to interrupt, Michael, but I just wanted to state the mechanic seems like a more mature version of Psychonauts to me.
You know, that's a cool way of putting it. It does kind of feel like a mature indie Psychonauts kind of deal, because you do have to pay attention to some of the words in there, because they are key. You find out about this thug's past, about how he was abused as a child and how he was gonna grow up and be like this big strong guy. He didn't want to be bullied anymore. He didn't want to be a pushover, and he ended up taking over as a leader for this gang. And you find out that the fire that was caused was not because of him and his gang. It was because of a car accident that he and his gang just happened to be inadvertently involved with. And you find out he was actually going to help the person in the car until he saw the person in the car was the caretaker.
So
he decided not to help her, and in fact he got what he wanted. He wanted her dead, and they drove off, and as they drove off the car exploded, and that's what caused the fire. But because they were inadvertently involved, they got the blame for it. So as you're playing, you're like, wait, so what am I fixing? Like, this bug isn't a real bug. Like, this person, you kind of feel like was kind of justified in his inactions. And you still got to go in and fix it anyway. So you invade this person's mind and their past, and you quote unquote fix it by getting rid of this bug that was pretty much their personality. And you turn them into where they're like, oh, yay, flowers. I'm so happy now. Thank you for fixing me. And you're just like, wait, am I the bad guy? Like,
are we the baddies?
Yeah, are we the baddies? Like, whoa, wait, now that I know more about this character, because again, they get you on judging a book by its cover. And you're just like, no, man, he's not really a bad guy. Like, yeah, he's not a great person, but like, he's not this hateful, spiteful, I'm going to burn the world because the world did me wrong kind of person. And like, yeah, they did mischief, like spray paint. Oh my goodness. Oh no. Something you can clean off. And like they weren't really going around like playing the knockout game or burning down people's homes. They were just doing, you know, teenage nonsense. Like, oh, we spray painted somebody's house, or, you know, threw trash everywhere. And you just feel like I'm in the wrong here. But the game plays it out like you're the good guy. Congratulations, doctor. Like, you get these praises, like, you did so great. You're the best of the best. And I'm like, I want to see more of this.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, Mindhack is one of those visual novel games that feels more like that has actual gameplay mechanics than visual novel. And I was just like, I want to know more. I want to know more about this facility. Because apparently, as a doctor, you're obsessed with flowers, but you've never actually been outside to see them. You have this AI that just brings you whatever you need. So you've never actually seen the outside world.
That sounds really, really cool.
Yeah. Mindhack oh my goodness. Riley, I want to play more of this. I want to know more about this. Like, I think out of all the games that I've shown, Mindhack is probably like the number one game I really want to know more about.
Definitely.
But oh man, yes, Riley. I know that you missed out on Ludonarocon, and I hope you actually look into it, because I think Ludonarocon is something that you would really love, especially for someone like yourself who loves a good story. Ludonarocon was definitely made for gamers like yourself.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out next year. Yeah, I do love story, and I love hearing about weird indie games that are doing something a little bit different.
There's even a few LGBT centric games that they had that I thought was kind of cool, but didn't really catch my interest, like Validate, which is kind of like a visual novel dating sim kind of deal that focuses more on story than anything else. I would like to go into more about Ludonarocon and everything that it had to offer. But let's see. But we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. But I will bring up one more game that I think you might be into, Riley. And not just because it's LGBT, but because it does actually, it deals with female gamers. It's called, where is it? Hi, Hello Girls. And it's a coming-of-age visual novel. It's set in the esports scene. And you play as the latest recruit for a new all-girls esports team. And you have these choices to where you can help your squad achieve a true potential, like the championship. Or you can kind of ruin that by trying to start up relationships. And we know how those kind of things go when you try to date teammates. So you have this chance to where do you put the team first, or do you put like your relationship first? And like, that can get all kinds of messy. And I think that's something that I think you might be interested in, because it not only tells a good story, but it's also set in like an all girls team in esports, which is growing every year. And there's more and more female teams coming out. So I think this is kind of cool. It didn't really catch my interest too much because, you know, Mindhack got to me. So sorry, that's like the one visual novel game I really wanted to play. So that kind of overtook Hi, Hello Girls. But I think that's one you might enjoy. The Rec, I think you might be into. Minds Beneath Us, I think will fill your sci-fi love. And of course, Mindhack, I think, is something that you'll be really interested in, since it takes more of a psychological turn than any of the other games I've mentioned so far.
Yeah, I'll have to, whenever these games come out, yeah, I'll have to check them out, because they all catch my interest.
Yeah, that's the great thing about Ludonarocon. Like, there's something in there for everybody, whether you are into action games or you're into visual novels. Like, they have some really cool stuff in there for everybody. Like, if you're more story than experimental gameplay. Because some people, they like experimental gameplay. But for me, I'm more of, like, Yeah, experimental gameplay can be kind of cool, but I'm more of the story. Tell me a good story. If you can tell me a good story, like Mindhack has been, like Mindhack is already done.
Yeah.
You've got me captured. You're going to be my game of the year. I don't care if I play, like, even if it's Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, as much as I'm looking forward to that game, if I find a game that tells me a great story, that's going to be my game of the year.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
But of course, I will send, I've already sent you a link for LudinaireCon. You said that you were going on a big trip tomorrow. So you have plenty of time to look those up.
10 hours in the car. So that'll be fun.
Oh, man. Actually, Riley, do you have, I was going to say, do you have anything that runs Steam mobily? Like if you had a gaming laptop?
I do have my gaming laptop. I'm thinking about bringing that with me and just maybe playing some games on the road. The catch with that, though, is there's not really a way to charge it in the car.
Ah, okay, yeah. Like I was going to say, I would recommend it because LudinaireCon, a lot of these games, they actually have demos for LudinaireCon. Like this is their E3. This is their big showcase. So a few of those games, they do have demos to them. So yeah, you can actually try out a few of those games that I mentioned.
Oh, hell yeah. You can be sure I'm going to do that. Like, absolutely.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. But speaking of things to play, Riley, what did you play last weekend?
Yeah, the game that I've been playing more than anything else when I have time to play a game is Dune Spice Wars. Still absolutely enthralled with that game. Last night, I booted up my gaming computer, with the intent of playing something else, like really playing something else. And then I realized that I was playing Dune Spice Wars and my computer died, and then I charged it a couple of days later, and my game was up, and I just started, I was like, okay, I made a fatal mistake. I was like, okay, let me just make a few moves, right? And then I'll like get off this game and play something else. And then I was playing it all night, like literally all night. So I mean, this game is just really, really caught me.
No, I get it, because I was like that with Sid Meier's. When I started playing like Sid Meier's 4, I was like, yeah, I'd wake up in the morning, like, I'll just play a real quick game. And next thing I know, it's like dinner time. I'm like, whoa, how long have I been playing this thing? It's like, it's been like 6 hours. Like, no. Yeah.
It's a little bit nuts. And then also, on your recommendation last week on the podcast, I bought KOTOR and I started playing it. And I absolutely understand why that game is so beloved, right? I didn't super far into it. But the music is amazing. The voice acting is surprisingly amazing from a game from that long ago.
Yeah.
Like the production value of it really caught me by surprise, I think.
There's a lot of love and passion put into that game.
Oh, definitely. And the main thing that I got addicted to, of course, is the card game, Pazok. If you put a card game in your video game, I will probably, on the whole, more likely than not, become more addicted to the card game than the actual game itself.
And that's why you didn't get far, because you were too busy playing games.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I was like really trying to beat that first guy. So like he lets you beat him once, I think, and then he's almost impossible to beat after that. But I was really, really trying to beat him. But after that, I went and did kind of like the gladiator thing where you're in the arena and you got to fight these other people. And it's like, wow, there's like, it's like a game where I feel like immersed in the world. And it really feels like I'm coming upon these things naturally, which is so, so good in a game that, you know, I don't know too much about game design, but if a designer can make you, like, suspend your disbelief, right, and just make you feel like the designer didn't put this here, I actually discovered it, that's magical. And it's especially magical for a game that came out 20 years ago, right? And I also just love it because it's D&D Star Wars, basically. My character is specializes in, like, demolitions and blasters and things. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the game, I really see why it's as popular and beloved as it is. What about you?
Okay, Riley, before I move on to my thing, I'm just tickled that a card game within a video game from like 20 plus years ago is the thing that captures you.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, it's any game. Final Fantasy IX, the card game in that completely addicted me, or got me addicted. The board game in Horizon Forbidden West, I probably played as much. Well, that's hyperbole, but I played a lot of that board game, right? And my saying is, like, if you put a board or a card game within your video game, it automatically goes up a point on the review scale in my own head.
All right, so there you go, everybody. Like, even if your game doesn't need it, just put a board or card game
in Please there. Put a board or a card game in your video game.
Oh, man. As for me, last weekend, I was busy with Ludonarricon. So what I've been playing were the demos that I spoke about earlier. So this isn't going to be far for me because I think I took up a lot of time talking about those games already. So what about this weekend, Riley? What are you playing?
Yeah, so I'm definitely looking to get more time into Dune Spice Wars. I won with the Fremen. I'm hoping to win with House Atreides. And last night, I kind of set myself up in I pretty much got a significant lead over the other AI enemy, you know, the other AI players, AI characters. So that's looking good. I'm definitely probably going to play more KOTOR. And also something that I forgot to mention in the What Have We Been Playing segment. I've been really trying to beat Final Fantasy IX. You know, I've been playing that game for like a year. And so what I did a couple nights ago, actually, prior to recording the podcast, is I have the Switch version. So this was something that I was previously pretty against, but I turned on like the mode where it lets you do 9,999 damage, and also the mode that kills, like, gets rid of random encounters, just because, you know, I was pretty close to the end of the game. I was like a little past midway point on disc 3, and there's 4 discs in total. So at this point, it's like a mad dash to the end. Like, if I'm feeling like playing Final Fantasy IX, I'm really, really trying to beat it. So at this point, I don't care about, like, leveling my characters. I don't care about, like, combat, really. I just want to see the end of the story. And I think that's fair enough, because I played the whole 35 hours plus, like, normally. So that's, you know, I might play that as well.
Oh, man. So you're going to be, yeah, you're busy, busy. You
got a lot, got so many games. Too many games.
Oh, man. As for me, this weekend, I am actually going to be playing Vampire the Masquerade Swan Song. Nacon sent me out a review copy of the game. So I will be busy playing that for the next week or so. And it's embargo until next Wednesday, like the day before the game comes out. No, a couple days before the game comes out. It comes out on the 19th, I believe, and I think they said we get to release the review on the 17th. But yeah, I am going to be playing that and getting ready for the review on that. So yeah, that's what I'll be doing this weekend. So Riley, what are you working on, and where can we find you?
Yeah, not working on much. I'm just working on this podcast. Currently, I'm off Twitter, so the only place that you can find me is in our Discord server, actually, which I would highly recommend joining.
As for me, I am working on my review for Vampire the Masquerade Swan Song at the moment. You'll be able to hear my review on that next week. And you could find me on Twitter. Unlike Riley, I'm no quitter. So, well, that kind of rhymes. So you could find me on Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. And if you find a weirdo in a fox hoodie, congratulations, you are in the right place. And like Riley mentioned before, you can find both of us actually in our Discord. which is the best way to get in touch with not just Riley and myself, but everybody over at thenerdstash.com. So go ahead, drop by our Discord, chat it up with us. Let us know what you thought about this episode or past episodes, or what you would like to see in future episodes. If you think that we are doing a great job, please consider dropping us a rating. It helps us out tremendously. And finally, please do check out thenerdstash.com. You can find all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, and more. We also have lists, to-the-point guides, reviews, and plenty of entertaining opinion pieces for you to read over. As you probably noticed, this episode was posted earlier than usual. And that's because every new episode of Power Up and Game will be posted on Friday nights, typically around 8 p.m. Eastern. And we wanted to do this for two reasons. First off, is to help out Taylor and his editing schedule. This man, we mentioned it earlier that Taylor stays busy, and we do want to make things easier for him. And secondly, it's better for anyone listening, as we'll be sharing our reactions to gaming news that's a little less old. There's nothing wrong with weekend news. We know, we're glad that all of you still support us, but we do kind of want to do these things a little more efficiently and get them out a little quicker without burning Taylor out. So we're doing a lot of cool stuff and a lot of big changes. Because we're not the only podcast on this network to change, though. Nerds Talk Movies is now going to be posted every Sunday night, typically around 8 p.m. Eastern. Check out the next episode of that show where Taylor, Drew, and the Nerd Stash very own John McDonald's talk all kinds of spoilers for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Which, Riley, you and I talked about it earlier, and we really enjoyed that.
Definitely.
So it's going to be interesting to hear what the Stash crew thinks of that movie. Because, man, we both enjoyed it. We won't be on that episode, because that'd be way too many people clucking about the multiverse, which I think would actually fit the theme for the movie in the first place. Oh, man. And lastly, we are still planning to have our first episode of Clash at the Stash this month. As we mentioned a long time ago, this podcast would be a once per month thing and would be posted on the last Friday of every month. We're really looking forward to that one. We've been tossing around all kinds of ideas for not only Clash at the Stash this month, but for the next couple of months. We've got some cool ideas that we want to try out. And during the week of Clash at the Stash, there won't be a new episode of this podcast or Nerds Talk Movies. During this time, we're working to make Clash at the Stash the best it could possibly be and getting the ball rolling on next month's installment. So, too long didn't read. Our first episode of Clash at the Stash is on Friday, May 27th. There won't be any new episodes of Power Up or Nerds Talk Movies that week, so mark your calendars as that will be our break as well. Which I'm actually okay with that. All right, and let's see. Riley, thank you for joining me as always. I hope you have a safe trip to old Canada.
Thank you.
And I hope you and your husband have a good time out there, because you guys definitely deserve a nice little break.
Thank you.
And to everybody who's listening in, I hope you all had a good time listening to Riley and myself go on about all kinds of theories and what EA is up to and so much more. And I hope you all enjoyed my talk for LudaNeraCon. Thank you for listening in, and we are very appreciative of your support, as this helps us continue doing what we're doing and having fun with it. We'll be back next week with more gaming news.